And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. I'll be your host this afternoon. We have Michelle Elfers will be here with details on this year's Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop. We're also going to be learning about a unique program for the residents at Wildflower Court. Paul Garnier will be here with details about an upcoming Persian dinner fundraiser for the Juno Charter School, and we're going to meet musician Young Apothecary in town for the Alaska Folk Festival. Writer's Almanac, Bird Notes, Music, and more coming up right here on KTOO News Juno, and also be rebroadcast at 4 o'clock on KRNN.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, we reported on the recent death of South Dakota Lower Brule Sioux Tribal Chairman Michael Jandrew. As Jim Kent reports, his passing comes amid unrest within tribal leadership and at a time when his longtime administration was under investigation.
During Jandrew's absence and as a result of a recent tribal court directive, Vice Chairman Kevin Wright attempted to hold the tribe's regularly scheduled council meeting on the first Wednesday of the month, April 1st. But two of the council members didn't attend, so there wasn't a quorum present. On April 3rd, and just hours before Jandrew's passing, Vice Chairman Wright issued a memo advising that he was assuming, quote, all the rights, privileges, and duties, as well as the responsibilities of the chairman, until the chairman returns to the office and can resume his position, end quote. Wright says the Constitution gives him that authority to assume the position of tribal chairman. He says he wasn't kept informed of Jandrew's condition and was surprised to hear of his death.
Kind of dumbfounded. It leaves an empty space in the community because, you know, he's been there for quite a while. It's going to be hard to fill those shoes, but...
But Wright plans to make his best effort. He adds that options for selecting someone for the vice chairman's position include either appointment by the tribal council or a special election. Out of respect for Mike Jandrew and his family, Wright would prefer to wait until an appropriate time of mourning has passed before making that decision. I'm Jim Kent.
Sexual assault survivors gathered at the Oklahoma State Capitol recently to draw the attention of lawmakers. As KGOU's Jacob McClelland reports, advocates say many Native women are victimized in state jurisdiction.
American Indians are 2.5 times more likely to experience sexual assault crimes compared to any other group, and 1/3 of Native women will be raped during her lifetime, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. Sean Partridge is the president of the Native Alliance Against Violence. She says there's an epidemic level of sexual violence.
If we want people to come forward and be able to disclose when they've been victimized, then we have to be ready to accept that information and support them. And because I think we know a lot of times in society that victims are blamed and shamed.
Shara Giles of the Muscogee Creek Nation says she was molested as a young child.
As much as I try to suppress those memories and not think about those things, it wasn't until I was 18 that I actually disclosed to my parents what had happened to me. Those wounds still carried with me. And it took a lot of healing. And so I just encourage you, those today, we're finding a lot of women, elder women in our communities that never disclosed and never had their stories told, and now they're coming forth.
Partridge encourages the development of an environment that supports disclosure and knowledge of where survivors can turn for help. I'm Jacob McClelland.
The Gila River Indian Community announced the launch of its digital TV station this week in Arizona. KJZZ's Carrie Young has more.
When running at full power, tribal officials estimate more than 90% of households on the reservation with an antenna will be able to pick up the station's signal. John Lewis is the chairman of the Gila River Broadcasting Corporation. He says the goal is to offer the community a reliable source of local content.
There really isn't anybody to provide that kind of community-based information that's geared toward our culture. So this is really the only way we would get something like this.
Limited programming is currently airing on the station's 3 channels right now. The tribe has plans to add a newscast and a children's show to the lineup, as well as content from producers like First Nations Experience. I'm Carrie Young.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. Our first guest today is Michelle Elfers, and Michelle is here to talk about the upcoming workshop. It's called Becoming an Outdoors Woman Spring Workshop, and this is being held May 15th through the 17th out at Echo Ranch Bible Camp. So welcome, Michelle.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming into the studio. Yeah. I think you've been here before in past years to talk about this.
Yes, you're always very supportive of us, and we appreciate it.
So I've done some reading here, but rather than me talking about what this workshop is, why don't you let folks know what it is?
Sure, I would love to. We are putting on the Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop in May, like you said, and it's put on by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And what we do is we have 3 days out at Echo Ranch, and over those 3 days you can take 4 classes in hunting, fishing, or outdoor skills. And so the classes are designed for women, although we do accept men, so you can also come, Jamie, if you'd like.
Thank you.
Sure. And they're for women 18 years and older, and they're at a beginner level. So what we're trying to target is women who have never fly fished before, or they've never used a chainsaw, or they've never been out crabbing in a boat and they really don't know what to do. Or maybe they've been out a couple times with friends or partners and just don't feel comfortable or don't really have a full skill set. So we're trying to bring them out into just a really safe, friendly atmosphere. Our instructors have been, most of them have been instructing for years and are familiar with teaching beginners. And we really focus on just having fun and making people feel comfortable in the classes. So, so like I said, you can take 4 classes over the weekend. We also have evening programs that we run, and so if you're not too exhausted by the end of the night, we also have like bear safety talks. This year, we're going to have a couple local women in town talk about preparing for and backpacking across Admiralty Island, which is we're pretty excited about because that is becoming more and more popular for people to do. And another fun thing we do that actually usually when I come here, I just talk about the classes and I don't talk about some of the stuff we do in the evening, but we have a round robin. And so that's about 2 hours where we set up 8 to 10 tables and women can go around for 5 to 10 minutes and they learn a quick skill at each table. And so I had someone last year tell me, this is my favorite thing to do all, you know, the whole weekend is to do this round robin. And I was just shocked. I never thought that that would be so popular. But you can learn things like how to make a fire with, you know, witch's hair, the lichen, or different materials like cotton balls or dryer lint. You know, you can learn how to tie 3 different knots in 5 minutes, you know. One year we did how to pee in the woods, you know, for people who aren't familiar with that. And one of my favorites that we do is if you're desperately hungry and you have no food left in the woods and you need to kill a squirrel, how you can do that. So we have fun with it.
So you've done this before in Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
Is this like for the past decade or is it more recent?
So this will be our 7th year running.
7th year.
Mm-hmm. It is. So we've been doing it for a while. It's hosted around the country. And there's other locations in Alaska that do it. I think there's even some international locations. So each location kind of has classes, you know, that are localized mm-hmm. based on your local topography and recreation and things like that.
And do you sell out? I mean, is it always fully attended? Do you have to turn people away? Or
The good news is yes, and the bad news is yes, I guess you could say.
It's good news.
It is good news. Every year we've filled to capacity. Some years we've had just huge waiting lists. So Registration opened on April 1st. Usually we fill up within about 2.5 weeks. So it's a really good idea if people are interested to sign up soon. And the other thing about signing up sooner rather than later is you put your first choice classes in and you have a better chance of getting in your first choice if you sign up sooner.
So I know you in the beginning you mentioned some of the kind of main theme areas of courses, but why don't you touch on that again? I mean, this is such an outdoors – I mean, we're in Alaska, and if you don't appreciate the outdoors or get out into the outdoors here, it's a, kind of a hard place to live. So these are people who are coming because they enjoy the outdoors, but the kinds of things that they can learn more about, I think you mentioned a few, but do you want to go into a little more detail?
Sure. So I think I might have mentioned that we generally classify the classes into hunting, fishing, and outdoor skills. So, for example, in hunting, we have a firearm safety class. And so this class is really great. I actually took it when I was a participant in Fairbanks before we had it here in Southeast Alaska. And what they do is they take all the dangerous components out of guns and they lay them out there so people who have never – I never touched a gun. So I was able to pick it up and feel very safe and learn how to handle it and use it and not be worried that I was going to accidentally, you know, fire it off. And so they teach you basic firearm safety skills that that you need to know in order to use a firearm. So then if you take that class, then you could take rifle or you could take shotgun and you learn how to shoot one and you'll actually shoot a rifle and a shotgun. Mm-hmm. We also have things like intro to deer hunting, field dressing, meat processing. In the fishing area, we have classes, learn how to fly fish or learn how to spin cast. We also do crabbing. So you go out in a boat. This is one of our most popular classes, actually. People really love this class. You go out in a boat and you actually set crab pots, you pull crab pots. And then we do things like how to fillet a salmon and how to cook salmon, how to smoke salmon, pickle it, and gravlax it. So we try and touch on lots of areas within that category.
Mm-hmm.
And then for outdoor skills, it's kind of a wider range of things. We have actually our most popular class last year was alpaca rafting. So you learn how to, you know, pack up your alpaca rafts, are little 5-pound rafts that pack down into a backpack. So you learn how to pack that, you take it out, blow it up, and then you go down Cowie Creek. You actually paddle down Cowie Creek, you know, with a loaded raft and learn how to do it. And it looks really fun, actually. I really want to take that class one day. Let's see. So other outdoor skills are survival, learning how to survive in the woods. Kayaking we have, Dutch oven cooking, you know, you can learn how to cook with a Dutch oven and make all sorts of delicious things.
So I think there's 26 different courses offered, right?
That sounds about right.
Yeah,
it's usually 24, 26.
So if people are curious and they want to learn more about it, where would they go to see this information?
So you could go to our website, would be a good place to start, and that's bow.adfg.alaska.gov. Or you can try, if you can't do that, you could try calling 465-6196, and someone will be able to send you information about the classes and registration information.
And then just again, it's a 3-day commitment, is that right? It's Friday through Sunday, and how does it, I mean, they get signed up, do they all drive out there on their own? I mean, how does the logistics of this a bit?
That's a good question. So there's a one-time a fee is $275, and what that includes is you go to one location, I think it might be Walmart, and you get picked up by a bus there, all participants do, and they'll take you out to Echo Ranch, or I'm sorry, they take you to Echo Cove on Friday morning, and then it's a walk along the beach. It's about a 40-minute walk. People with specific issues, we can get a boat ride arranged for them, but otherwise it's a pretty easy walk along the beach. And then the classes are included, the lodging, you stay in cabins out there, is included. Meals are included. They have actually really good food, which I was amazed the first time I went, but it's very good food. And then the transportation back's the same. You'll walk along the beach and get a bus back.
And the cabins are just kind of rustic bunk kind of style cabins, right?
Yeah, there's bunks. And they have a wood stove if it's cold. Mm-hmm. We'll fire it up at night.
So it's fun.
It is. It's fun. It's really fun. I'm a mom of two little kids, and I look forward to it every year as just a getaway. I've been teaching fly fishing for years, and it's
so you're one of the instructors.
I am. I've been an instructor for fly fishing.
So obviously, there's instructors for all of these courses.
There are, yes.
And are they all Juneau-based or primarily Juneau-based?
Primarily. Every year we may have one or two or three people coming from out of town if we need to do that. But we try and get Juneau-based instructors. There's a lot of female instructors. We have a few men. Also, we try and do two instructors to a class when we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
the class sizes are small, right?
They are.
Yeah.
They're on average 5 to 8 people, depending on the class. Some are a little bigger, some are a little smaller. So they are pretty small.
Okay. So plus it's in one of the most beautiful places in Southeast. I mean, it's gorgeous out there.
Yes, I would argue that that's true. It is gorgeous. And it's drier out there, so the weather's usually better.
True.
Won't guarantee it, but it usually is. And we do campfires at night, and you just sit out on the beach and look at the Chilkats and Berners Bay, and it's just really incredible.
Michelle, before we wrap it up, anything else that you wanted to make sure that you talked about or mentioned before we switch?
I do, actually. I'm glad you asked. We do have some scholarships available for people with financial needs, so they can ask about that, too, if they call the number I mentioned before, 465-6196.
And again, the website for people to get more information?
It is bow.adfg.alaska.gov.
And we've been talking about the Becoming an Outdoors Woman Spring Workshop coming up this weekend, May 15th through May 17th. Michelle, thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
I woke up this morning, frozen nearly dead, so goddamn cold I couldn't get out of bed. As I lay there shivering, cold as I could be, suddenly a revelation came to me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, and all night long stoke her fire, yes we. I put her hat down at the co-op, I notice I'm stumped. I don't care if she's skinny and I don't care if she's plump. I don't care if she's pretty or ugly as sin. But if she's got a chainsaw, she can move right in. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, and all night long, stoke her fire, yes. Kind of gentle, we would never fight. If she went out with other guys, I wouldn't get uptight. If she could just do her thing, I could just do mine. For her and me and that machine, we'd get along just fine. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw.
And I'd like to welcome Mary Kay Vellucci to the studio. It's nice to have you here from Wildflower Court. And Mary Kay, you've come in today to talk about a special program for the residents of Wildflower Court. And I think the title is Music and Memory, or the Music and Memory Program. So why don't you just tell folks what the program is, and we'll have some more conversation after that.
Okay. Several months ago, a few coworkers and I watched a documentary called Alive Inside. And it's an award-winning documentary initiated by a gentleman named Dan Cohen, who was a social worker who eventually got connected with employment at Apple. He merged those two careers, did some volunteer work at a long-term care facility in Massachusetts, and provided iPods for people with dementia and Alzheimer's. Spent a lot of time creating individualized playlists for them that have songs that induced positive memories and positive feelings for those people based on their history. So the documentary goes through a 3-year period of time with him. There's a video on there about a gentleman named Henry who was quite quiet, did not speak much, but Dan Cohen found out that he loved Cab Calloway, put some Cab Calloway songs on an iPod, and he really had an awakening and a quickening. And he spoke, and he recalled events in his life that he hadn't talked about for decades. It was really quite compelling. So after watching that, we acquired an iPod for a resident of ours who was having periods of distress. And through the people who know him well, we created a playlist, gave him his iPod, and he also had one of those aha moments over the song Amazing Grace. And from that point forward, it was game on. We were all in. And for the past several months, many of us have been trained about the Music and Memory Program that's managed by Dan Cohen. We've become a certified Music and Memory facility, I believe the only one in Alaska, according to the map on the Music and Memory website. And we've been getting our internal house in order. Mm-hmm. We've been getting the technology set up, creating a music library, largely from the CDs that K2 was kind enough to give us. Thank you, Jeff. And we've been collecting iPods by donation, and also some of them have been purchased by residents. So right now we're in our pilot phase. We have a handful of residents who are using iPods for both recreational purposes and also for therapeutic purposes. So we're evaluating how that's working for those folks and preparing for our fuller launch.
Before the show, we chatted a little bit, and I mentioned music therapy, and we talked about how there is such a thing as music therapy,
yes,
but that this is a slightly different thing. I mean, music can be therapeutic in many ways for many people, but the personalized playlist, the idea of these specific songs that just can cut through to the person's memory, whether it's a happy or a sad memory, it doesn't matter, but just that emotion of life and the remembrance of those moments in time, that's what it's kind of aimed at doing, right?
That is exactly the key. The playlist is 90% of the success. It's intended to bring joy. Like myself, for example, on a rainy Juno afternoon, I may listen to Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles or Beautiful Day by U2, and it will elevate my mood. And the key is to find those songs for individual people to help them tap into the emotions and the feelings that they associate with their favorite songs long after their memory of what they had for breakfast yesterday is gone.
So for, I imagine for some people, you can probably turn to family members and or friends to help compile a playlist. My guess is there are some patients that you may not have that kind of access. And how do you go about creating the playlist for them?
I actually went through that yesterday. A soft-spoken gentleman and we did not have access to information that he could provide us about his favorite songs. But I knew that in the 60s, he was a disc jockey. So we created a draft playlist of a variety of songs from that era. And for about 60% of them, I got, a polite smile. But there was Reelin' in the Years by Steely Dan and Play That Funky Music, White Boy, where his eyes just lit up and his eyebrows went back to his hairline and he was strumming a guitar in his wheelchair. So that's the objective. The objective is to find those kinds of songs and provide them for people for recreation or joy, or to help reduce agitation, to alleviate depression. Some people use iPods and music therapy to help them with insomnia or just to gear them up for social activities, puts them in the frame of mind where they want to be more social, they want to be more engaged instead of being quiet or isolated.
I think you said kind of in a pilot phase.
Yes.
Is that correct? So how long ago did you start with this, and when do you leave the pilot phase and fully adopt?
Well, we intend to be in the pilot phase for about another 2 weeks. We're collecting music preference lists for other residents, and we have a list of people who are waiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who have come to myself and my coworkers and said, I want one. So one of our obstacles now is having enough music from a large enough range of genres to satisfy the taste of 57 folks.
And is this, and there are just a couple of you doing all this work, or is this our volunteers helping with this work?
Well, I'm actually glad you brought that up. But in many ways, this is a facility-wide undertaking. We've had the board of directors is supportive, Dr. Benjamin in particular. Board members have donated iPods. Our steward and leader, Ruth Johnson, has been fully supportive. My co-worker, Sharon Woodward, the director of social services. The people in Wildflower Court have made this easy because they're not creating obstacles. They're being fully supportive. Jill Lingle, the occupational therapist, is my the other M in the M&M Music and Memory Program. She's been tremendously helpful. So right now, Jill and I are managing this with support from the other care partners at Wildflower Court. But what we would like to get to is to have one or two volunteers who have some life or work experience working with seniors and elders and a working knowledge of iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Successful music and memory programs, the way they operate is residents are set up with an iPod, and then once every week or 10 days, every 7 to 10 days, someone visits them, and their playlist is reviewed, and the songs they don't like are removed, and songs they do like are added, and that's how you keep it fresh, and you get the most benefit from the program.
Yeah.
So we are looking for one or two volunteers to do this very fun program.
It must be rewarding to, must be amazing to see somebody light up and have that connection of to their life, you know.
Yes, it really is. There's very few things that you just know are right.
Mm-hmm.
You just know they're the right thing to do. And it's very compelling. It's very compelling. The one in five people, you know, in this room, there are 10 people, and in the lobby, two of us will experience Alzheimer's or dementia as we age, the 20% of the population. So becoming educated about this by watching Alive Inside, it's available on Netflix, or contributing to our program at Wildflower Court, it's not just for people who experience Alzheimer's today. It's really representative of a culture change and a paradigm shift in how people with these conditions are regarded and the direction of the future, which is more holistic.
Well, fascinating topic. And I guess one more question, and then we probably need to move along here. Mm-hmm. But and is this going on all across the country? Is this program being picked up all over the place?
Yes. Actually, when we completed our training in February, the information is available at musicandmemory.org. When we completed our training in February, we were notified that they had just surpassed the 1,000 mark of 1,000 certified music and memory facilities nationally.
Mary Kay Vellucci, thank you for coming in. Was there anything else you wanted to make sure you said today? Have we missed anything here on your list?
Well, I guess I just would like to say for those of you who find your iPods and charging cables and original CDs as obsolete technology now that we've moved on to the more digital world, if you have them to donate, you can take them to the reception area at Wildflower Court during business hours. We also have an after-hours drop box in the lobby, which anyone can enter 24 hours a day.
Mary Kay Vellucci, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 8th of April, 2015. It's the birthday of the novelist Barbara Kingsolver, born in Annapolis, Maryland, 1955, grew up in rural Kentucky, went off to DePaul University in Indiana, majored in biology, moved to Arizona, went to graduate school, studied the social life of termites, did some science writing, and finally took a chance on fiction, submitted a short story to a contest. She won, and she wrote in her journal, all caps, "I am a writer." She was pregnant, she had terrible insomnia, and she began working on a novel in the middle of the night, the story of a young woman from rural Kentucky who leaves behind her town to drive west, ends up with custody of a Cherokee infant whom she names Turtle. It came out in 1988 called The Bean Trees. She's written six novels since then, including The Poisonwood Bible, Flight Behavior, and nonfiction, Animal Vegetable Miracle, about her family's decision to spend an entire year eating only local food. Barbara Kingsolver, who said, "I really believe that complex ideas can be put across in simple language, and a good plot never hurt anybody. It doesn't cost you in literary terms to give your readers a reason to turn the page." 1911, on this date, the Dutch physicist Heike Kamerlingh Onnes discovered superconductivity, the quality of certain materials to exhibit no electrical friction or resistance. He found it in mercury. It was found in other materials as well. Today is the day on which Buddhists celebrate the birthday of Buddha, born Prince Siddhartha in India, 6th century B.C., raised in luxury, married father to son, went out to see the world, and outlined the basic tenets of Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, that the nature of life is suffering, suffering is caused by human cravings, there is relief from suffering in the state of nirvana, and nirvana is attainable by following an eightfold path to self-improvement. It's the birthday of the astronomer David Rittenhouse, born near Germantown, Pennsylvania, 1732, built one of the first telescopes in America, studied the transit of Venus. Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia is named for him. And it's the birthday of the lyricist Yip Harburg, New York City, 1896, wrote April in Paris, It's Only a Paper Moon, and he wrote, "The Lord made Adam, the Lord made Eve, he made 'em both a little bit naive." Here's a poem for today, a poem from unknown creators, a spiritual from the 19th century. "O poor sinner, now is your time. O poor sinner, what you going to do when the lamp burned down? Oh, the lamp burned down, and you cannot see. The lamp burned down, and you cannot see. Ezekiel saw that wheel of time, and every spoke was of humankind. God made man, and he made him out of clay, and put him on the earth, but not to stay. They cast old Daniel in the lion's den, and Jesus locked the lion's jaw. Old Satan's mad, and I am glad he missed one soul he thought he had. Old Satan's a liar, and a conjurer too. If you don't mind, he'll slip it on you. Oh, poor sinner, now is your time. Oh, poor sinner, what you gonna do when the lamp burned down? A spiritual from the 19th century. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. Throughout the month of April, their favorite poem project, Florida, invites Floridians to submit their favorite poem. Florida-based listeners can submit their nominations at poetryfoundation.org/favoritepoemflorida. And by Progressive Insurance, with its APRON project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Up next on a Juno afternoon, we have three people in the studio. Two eighth graders and somebody who's older.
Far more than that, yes.
These folks are with the Juno Community Charter School, and the two students, Reed and Lily, are both eighth graders, and they're here to talk about their fundraiser that they have coming up on Saturday, April 18th. And why don't you guys, I don't know who's going to go first, but why don't you guys tell folks what the fundraiser is and why you're raising funds?
So our fundraiser is going to be a Persian dinner. It's going to be at the Yacht Club. And so we are raising funds to go on the eighth grade trip, which is going to be in May. And all the eighth graders go on the trip, and we go to Denali and Fairbanks. And we do lots of science things. Visit lots of museums and lots of nature sites and stuff like that.
And so we've been raising money for plane tickets and chaperones and cars and food and stuff like that. So and we're trying to have the kids do as much of the fundraising as possible.
So when is the trip going to happen?
May 9th. It starts May 9th. It's about a week.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
Exciting. Yes. So is this the last fundraiser as part of getting ready for this?
Yes, this is.
And how many fundraisers have you done?
I think we've done
five or something.
We've done some smaller ones and then a couple bigger ones.
We put on a movie. We had a truffle sale. We had a garage sale.
Yeah.
So every year, is this a tradition that the eighth grade class gets to go on a fundraiser, and part of the deal is you have to raise some of the money?
Yeah.
Are you guys excited about going?
I'm really excited. I've always seen the eighth graders come back and say how fun it was, so now it's going to be fun to be able to do that.
And is it always kind of a Denali Fairbanks trip, or do they do different trips each year?
Yeah, it's the same trip each year. But things vary a little bit in where we go, but mostly the same. We go to, the permafrost caves, and we go to different museums, and there's a school we stay at a school and a church that are both very generous and donated their space for us to stay in. It's been pretty much the same throughout the years.
Yeah.
And then the days, I'm assuming it's a lot of fun, but it's also school, right? You're still in school.
Yeah.
We're going to have coursework and math classes and stuff like that. But
yeah, lots of science stuff, because that's what we're heading up there to see, the how the ecosystem works differently than in Juno.
So what a great goal to have there for eighth graders throughout the year to raise funds. And now you've got this fundraiser. So I know Paul's going to have to help with this part, but do you guys want to talk about, was this your idea? Did you come up with the Persian dinner idea?
I think it was the eighth graders to do Persian. I don't know who originally thought of the whole dinner idea, but
yeah, we've done it two times, once or twice in the past, and it's worked out really well.
Ethiopian dinner, and I don't know what the other one was.
Yeah, and we chose to do Persian because there's not, any place to get Persian food in Juno, and we think it'll be something new for people.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of an unusual food that a lot of people might have not had.
Well, we can get Persian at Paul's house. We know that.
Yeah.
Well, so let's hear from the cook here.
Okay, great. They did an Ethiopian food dinner last year. That was just a great event. John Gazelle cooked that, and it was almost like a private party. People got together with friends and bought a whole table's worth of tickets. And John had spent time in Africa, so he was familiar with that cuisine. And I think people in Juneau know me as a real serious home cook. I frequently give dinners out to various auctions and do Indian and Mexican and Japanese and Chinese. And I've been sort of privately been pushing on Middle Eastern food for a bunch of years now. So this will be the first time to roll it out publicly. And we're going to have the posters is four, but I'm guessing by the time I get rolling, we'll serve a whole lot more than that, courses of food. And some of the distinctive dishes that would make Persian food different maybe than some of the Middle Eastern or Lebanese food that we might be more familiar with. There's a lot of real sweet and sour savory dishes. There's berries and raisins and nuts and apricots and pomegranate and things added to things. So I know we're going to do a chicken and a walnut and pomegranate sauce. We're going to do some flatbreads. Lots of pickles and finger foods and hummus and some exotic rice pilaf dishes and probably shish kebabs is kind of the main street food of Iran.
Have you done some of these before for the charter school? Have you helped with?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of them for the symphony and other organizations in town. But Reed's my son, so I'm on call for this one.
Mm-hmm. So you're the master chef here. You get to figure it all out. But I'm assuming the students help.
They'll be doing tons of prep work and bread making, and Lily's going to make cookies and baklava, I think, right, or some sort of cookies. And we'll have the Yacht Club, and we'll be going all day Saturday at it with as many kids as we can get in there working. The kids will also be hostesses and wait staff, and mm-hmm. I know they've always had a great time doing that, getting dressed up and serving people. I think the kids are working on decorations, and it's going to be a great event, and we timed it early on Saturday so that if people do want to have a pre-symphony dinner, they could go to the Yacht Club, have a marvelous dinner, and then go hear the symphony right at the end of it and not even really needing to repark if they don't want to.
So how big is your 8th grade class? How many kids are there?
I think there's 14.
And all 14, I'm assuming, will be there and doing their part?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, Paul, how many adults do you recruit for this as well to pull it all, make it all
work?
I'm
not sure what the final list right now is, but we have a friend that's Syrian-American, and she cooks very similar food in her home, her grandmother's recipes. I know she's coming to help out. And I do have some Iranian American friends that are going to come give us some pointers as well, plus a number of the parents. Hopefully, will be there to help out. Certainly on the cleanup crew.
So the menu sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's going to be a very successful fundraiser. So why don't you guys just tell folks one more time what the fundraiser is? You know, what time, where, and what they can expect, and then we'll move along.
So it's a fundraiser, going to go on the 8th grade trip to Denali. It's going to be at the Yacht Club. It's going to be the Yacht Club Saturday, April 18th at 6 to 7:30 p.m.
And if you want to get tickets, all the 8th graders have tickets, so if you know any of them, you can get them, or you can go to the office at the charter school and her number is 586-2526 if you want to call. And there's going to be about 80 tickets right now, but we're going to check out the space soon, and we're going to see, we might expand that if there's more people who want to come.
Delicious menu, opportunity to support the Juneau Community Charter School and the 8th grade field trip, which sounds like it's going to be, you guys will have a blast, and good luck with the fundraiser, and thank you all. Actually, Paul, before we wrap it up, was there anything else that you want to mention?
Yeah, there was one thing. We're actually, a number of us aren't real big meat eaters, so we're actually going to have a real big component of vegetarian food. So if you're not interested in a full meat dinner, there'll be plenty of good food food for you as well there. So.
Sounds great. Reed, Lily, Paul, thank you very much for coming in, and good luck with the fundraiser.
Thank you.
Thanks
thank
a
you
lot,
very
Jimmy.
Much.
To welcome folks back. Here we have in the studio Carolyn Hedin.
Very good.
Did I get it right?
You did.
Thank
Congratulations.
You very much. So Carolyn is here. She's one of many people who've traveled to Juneau to perform in the Folk Festival and celebrating its 41st season. And Carolyn, you go by the stage name of Young Apothecary.
That's correct.
And is it just you, or is there a band involved? Who's in town?
Currently, it's just me. It's a new project. It just got a name, actually, and I just released a new EP from it. But at the Folk Fest show, I may actually have someone joining me. Mm-hmm. Ryan Cortez, I think, is going to jump on drums. So that will be really nice to have some company on stage.
First time for the Folk Festival?
First time. I've heard such amazing things about it. I spent some time here in Juneau a few years ago and have been meaning to come back ever since. And people always recommended coming for the Folk Festival. And I'm so happy to actually be here to see it because it's such an amazing community event.
So when did you get in town?
I got in town on Monday.
Uh-huh.
Then headed right away to the Folk Festival last night, and it was great. The support that people have for the festival and the amount of people that come out is so amazing.
So you're scheduled for Friday night, 9 o'clock. That's a pretty good time slot.
That's
so,
right. So.
That must be pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting.
So your music. Tell folks about your music.
I'm actually from Canada, and I grew up right in the middle of the prairies. I went to university out in British Columbia, which is very different. It's mountainous. It's a lot like Juneau. And I never thought that I would go back to Alberta. And I did. Now I live there full time and fell back in love with the plains. And so my music is really inspired by that landscape and the openness and like the sage grass and the prairie and the big sky. So I'm really influenced by that. And I recently put out this new album, as I mentioned. It's my first more professional studio release.
I'm Congratulations.
I know. I'm so happy to finally have it out there. So that recording is kind of a mixture of jazz and electronic music and more traditional folk music.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fusion. And so the show I'm going to be doing on Friday is kind of reflective of that. There's some lighter, more jazzy components, and then some heavier, more like rock, electronic things.
So music, is this a... have you always been a musician, or is this something that's been on a side project that you're turning into something now? I mean, give me a sense of...
That's a great question. It's always been a big part of my life. When I was young, I sung in church choirs and was really involved in the theater community growing up. And I, through university, played in another band in university. So this is my first kind of more solo project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have been involved with a variety of different expressions of music, and to finally have my own thing that is more reflective of the different things that I've tried and things that I'm interested in now. So I'm excited to spend more time more focused on music, because it has been more of a side project in general. But I think it's time in my life to dedicate more of myself to developing musically.
So you mentioned, I guess, the nature or the natural surroundings
yeah.
of the plains as a source of inspiration. Are there other musicians or artists that have inspired the kind of approach you're taking with music?
Absolutely. I mean, my musical interests are kind of all over the place. I'm interested in the more kind of classic female vocalists like Billie Holiday, and newer artists such as My Brightest Diamond. She's from Detroit. She's amazing. She's my go-to. Jeff Buckley, Pete Seeger. So a lot of artists that like to blend storytelling with amazing vocals and narrative, big visuals. So I like to draw from a lot of different vocal styles. I'm more of a vocal artist at heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm drawn to those types of musicians.
So where are you in Calgary? Where are you? Where do you live?
Okay. I grew up in Calgary. And why the nature component is so important to me is I'm actually a naturalist. So I work for Parks Canada, which is our version of the American National Park Service. So my day job is to educate people about falling in love with the plains and bison and prairie landscapes. Then in my off time, I'm doing the same thing, but through a different communication mode.
Mm-hmm. So are you based in Calgary right now?
Or? I'm based in the middle of the bush.
And
I'm a bush woman.
So where I was going with this is like, well, what's the music scene like where you live, but are you out in the bush?
The music scene is pretty much myself in a cabin in the woods. So it's that classic kind of musician creation atmosphere. I live in the middle of a national park in a community of 12. So it's pretty much just been me stewing around, going for a big walk out in the woods and coming back and writing about the things that I saw along the way that inspired me. But I do live really near to Edmonton, which has a really burgeoning music scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to make connections there, and we'll be doing a few shows there in the summertime. But on a regular basis, it's pretty much just me and the wild things.
So here you are. You have a Friday night. You'll be on the stage at 9:00. Between now and then, what will you be doing? And then after the folk festival, are you touring? Are you going to go to other places in Alaska, or do you go home?
That's another great question. Well, in the meantime, I'm trying to soak up as much Juneau as I possibly can. We went and had a hike up Grandchild Peak the other day.
Nice.
Went to the AK Reuse Center just now, the brewery. Going to go to as much of the folk festival as possible. And then do the show, and then it's purely dedicated to the folk festival. So going to the workshops, the dance shows.
Yeah.
And I leave back to work. I work on Tuesday, so it's back to the grind. But it's not too bad of a grind, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I know we do want to listen to some of your music before we go. So, Jeff, do I need to say goodbye now? I do. So the one question I didn't get to ask was about the name Young Apothecary. So real quickly, how did you come up with that name?
It was derived from a card game where it's like a word association game. I was volunteering in Montana, and I'm a bit of an herbalist, so I like to help heal people using salves and different kind of plant medicines. So Young Apothecary were two randomly words that were generated from a group of friends through this card game as we were on a road trip. They're like, you know, that's the name for your new band. Okay.
Perfect. So Friday night, 9 o'clock, Young Apothecary, Carolyn Hedin, a pleasure to meet you. And we're going to listen to some of your music as we go out here. So thank you. Welcome to Juneau.
Thank you for having me. See you on Friday night.
Neighbors for the annual Empty Bowls benefit at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Empty Bowls, a fundraiser for the Glory Hole, features delicious all-you-can-eat soups from your favorite local restaurants, fresh-baked cookies, live music, a silent auction, the always-fun dessert auction, and beautiful bowls from local artisans. Tickets are available at both Hearthside Books locations and at the door. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole.
Dear Mom, thank you for quitting smoking. It's hard to do, but smoking can kill you, so quitting saved your life. I'm so lucky to have parents like you and Dad. Other parents would probably say, oh, he's just a kid. Love, Nick.
My kids inspired me to quit. Find your reason to quit smoking.
Call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line, free for all Alaskans, at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This message is brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
This is